I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Costas does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 74, the Kenley Jansen or Mike Kickham 2020 Red Sox superstar episode. If you're listening on drop day, it's May 20th. This is the official podcast of Gobbling Wasabi Till It Makes Your Nostrils Bleed, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, before we talk about the series in which the Red Sox dropped 2 out of 3 to the St. Louis Cardinals, who we said before the series they were terrible. They are terrible. They took 2 out of 3 from the Sox. So what does that say about the Sox? But before we get into that, subscribe to the Play Tessie podcast, whether you're listening on Apple, Spotify, or the Odyssey app. Hit that subscribe button, rate us 5 stars, leave a comment. YouTube, we are on the WEI channel. We've got our own playlist. Play Tessie episodes go up on WEI, so remember to rate those or hit the thumbs up on those episodes and subscribe to WEI. I'm here with Sammy. Pat is doing more graduation stuff, so we've got Joe Braverman, producer Joe Braverman, in for Pat here today. I am Gordo. Good to be here with you guys. But yeah, Sox drop 2 out of 3. I guess the first thing I'll say here, I'd been like, as these series go, like I take notes on, you know, good topics for the podcast. I write notes on what's going on in the games, how things are making me feel, good conversation topics. And like the entirety of the first two games, it was just, holy, this offense is terrible. This offense sucks. This offense cannot get out of their own way. They don't get on base. When they do get on base, they don't get runners in. It doesn't matter who's up. I get that guys are hurt, but it's not just the bottom of the order not getting guys in. It's the meat of the order not getting guys in. And then, of course, in the last game, they put up 11 runs and do what they did, and it was great. I had a blast watching the game on Sunday, and by no means am I upset that that changes or that could potentially change the conversation, but I don't want to let it change the conversation. I think we got to have the conversation about the offense because it's time. I know that they had a good game today. They scored 11 runs, but this has been a recurring trend. We've talked about it a bunch off the air, but it's time to really dig into what's going on with this team at the plate on the air.
Gordo, before we get into that, quick question. What is more painful to watch? Game-breaking bad defense or game-breaking bad offense?
Oh.
They both suck.
You want to know my answer to that? I think it's more painful in the moment to watch game-breaking bad defense because you expect every play to be made at the major league level. But moving, like, you can always convince yourself that the defense is going to end up being okay because you think that big leaguers can make every play. Whereas the offense, it's like, if they don't hit, I'm just not convinced they're ever going to start hitting because hitting at the big league level is hard.
Yeah. Also, with the defense, there's no in-game fix. You know, with the bad offense, you have missed opportunities, but then you score 4 runs the following inning. You're kind of over it. You can't really do that with defense. So, not to diminish the point that the offense has been, aside from today, Sunday, as we record, it's been pretty rough. For me, it's when they get guys into scoring position and I'm finally feeling good about it, and then they strike out. Strikeouts will kill you every single time. It's just, and what do? There's really no fix right now. Like, they already brought in Cooper, Smith, Zach Short. He's gone. But, like, that's the frustrating part. When we were talking about the defense, we had a handful of ideas of how we could fix it. Move Rafaela to short, bring someone in. They did both of those things. And, you know, it's not perfect, but the defense is a lot better. What do you do about this offense?
Well, I guess the idea of it being fixable is also a big factor because, as you said, they've brought in these different pieces. I mean, generally speaking, it's the same group and they continue to make the same mistakes. So you try and fit another piece into the jigsaw puzzle, but it still doesn't fit, at which point you just get so frustrated that you tear the whole puzzle apart, throw it up in the air, and be just like, what more can I do? So that's part of where the frustration comes from when you're looking at it offensively versus defensively.
The thing, Sammy, to your point about they've done, like the getting the Dom Smith and Garrett Cooper and Zach Short, like going out, I do give the front office a lot of credit for taking, I don't want to, taking matters into your own hands is a strong term, but they
proactive.
Saw,
they were proactive. Yeah, they were,
that's the right word. They were proactive.
They're not just
about
sitting
it.
On their hands.
Which in the past, we have seen them sit on their hands and kind of just keep trying things that we know aren't going to work. But at the same time, I don't want to necessarily throw all the blame at them, because we saw that they were interested in all of these guys. We saw that they wanted Teoscar Hernandez in the offseason. We saw that there was legitimate interest in Gio Urshela. And we know the reason that those guys aren't here is not because the front office didn't want those guys. It's because ownership put a lid on where this team could go spending wise. And I know, like, I don't want to like get into a whole ownership discussion, because I just don't feel like May is the time for that, especially like on a day that they win. But yeah, I mean, these guys, it's the front office has the right idea. They wanted guys. They knew they didn't have enough.
We should make the distinction. When we say front office, we're talking about Craig Breslow and his guys. We're not talking about ownership. You just alluded to it, but I want to make that abundantly clear. We're giving credit to Breslow and the guys who are actually, you know, making the deals, the in-person deals. Craig Breslow loves to make those in-person deals, apparently. He made two of them. He's an old school guy. But yeah, it's frustrating. They're both frustrating. The bad defense, which, like I said, we think has a solid bandage over it right now. And then the bad hitting. The bad hitting is frustrating because, like, you've tried to fix it and it's not really working. I do think that Garrett Cooper will start to hit, as he's done for his pretty, you know, solid major league career. He's been a average to slightly above average player for a while now. So I think he'll come around, just because we've seen him do it a lot before. And then Vaughn Grissom, the other guy who's really just, you know, not hitting at all right now. We've talked about him. He lost 14 pounds. There's rumors saying that he lost even more than that, but he lost a lot of weight from a flu, some sort of sickness he had. And he's even made comments post game saying the bat feels heavy. So you know that it's affecting him. He's also 23 and doesn't, I believe he doesn't even have 300 major league at bats. So that's a guy you got to wait and see with. But it's guys like, and I hate to say this because he's been on fire, but Devers striking out where there's guys on third base, or Tyler O'Neill striking out in a big spot when all you need is to put the ball in play, really makes me miss a guy like Xander Bogaerts, who is always good for that.
Yeah, and it was definitely good to see both Devers and O'Neill going deep today. And Devers, five straight games with a homer is ludicrous. Yeah. It's the most in Red Sox history, tied for it. No one in Red Sox history has ever done it, six games in a row, and I believe only 18 Major League Baseball players have ever done six in a row. But you're right, Sammy. It's when Devers has come up with guys on and two outs that he's struck out almost every time. And Tyler O'Neill with guys on base, that's been well documented. People have really taken a hold of that stat. But I want to go back to your question, though, about like, what do you do? You are sitting here in May. You have limited options you can do, regardless of what position you're in. And no team, like, I know Luis Arraez got traded, but for the most part, teams do not sell off legitimate pieces on either side of the ball at this stage in the season. Meanwhile, the Red Sox have scored six runs or fewer in 17 of their last 18 games. This is not an explosive offense, no matter which way you put it. And you don't have reinforcements coming quickly. Like, this guy's coming back soonest are Casas and Yoshida, who they've been really quiet about Yoshida's timeline. Like, very mysterious about what this injury is. And so I'm just kind of hoping that he's around the same time as Casas, who hopes to be back on June 21st, which, if you're listening on drop dates, what, the 20th. So you got about a month to go.
At best a month. You got at best a month. And then, you know, it's Major League Baseball. He's going to suck for like a week. That's just how it goes. Everyone has that, you know, getting back into, look at Garrett Cooper, not the same player, I know, but that's a guy who's been good for a while. He looks like he can't even swing a bat, though he is, you know, been slowly getting the hang of it. But
had a solid game on Sunday. But yeah, I agree.
You're right, Gordo.
Like, not even close to good enough.
Yeah, I mean, the grand point you're making is true. Reinforcements are, they're not super far away, but they're certainly not close. So there's still this period, about a month, maybe a month and a half, where the Red Sox need to tread water. And oh my God, wait until you see the schedule they've got coming up, because it's bad. Is a murderer's row. We went over it yesterday on WEEI. There's
I'll one pull break. It up again. You want yeah, me to say
one
it?
Break. You got the White Sox at some point.
Sammy, you ready for it?
Hit it.
All right. You got three with the Rays. You got three with the Brewers. You got three with the Orioles. Three with the Tigers. Sorry, four with the Tigers. Two with the Braves. And then you've got your four with the White Sox that represents your break. And then you've got a homestand. Great, but it's three against the Phillies and three against the Yankees. And then you go to Toronto, to Cincinnati, back home to play Toronto and San Diego. That takes you to the end of June. There so is got, one break.
So you got 15 games in a row. A good math guy was doing that off the dome. 15 games in a row coming up against tough competition. The easiest is probably the Tigers, and they're not easy. So you got 15 of those games, then you get a four-game break, and then you get about another 15 of tough competition after that at the worst possible time. So I guess my next question would
be... It's going to be hard to stay afloat.
What's afloat to you? That's what I wanted to ask. What is staying afloat to you over that? Let's call it a 40-game stretch, roughly. Yeah, 40 games. These next 40 games, what's afloat?
I think the way I've always looked at it, and you guys can tell me if you disagree here, but I think staying afloat is going 500. If they can stick around that 500 mark, that opens you up. Like, they were talking about a conversation. I don't know which one on the Roku broadcast was talking about this, which whether it was the play-by-play guy or if it was Middlebrooks, but they were talking about how Tyler O'Neill was reminiscing about the, I believe it was 2021 run with the Cardinals where they won 17 in a row to get into the postseason. If you leave yourself, and I'm not saying 17 in a row, but if you leave yourself open to getting into a postseason spot, if you win 9 out of 11 games or something that's doable in a major league schedule, then yeah, that is staying afloat to me. I don't know. Joe, where are you at with, like, what would be reasonable to you here over the next 40 or so games? Like, what is staying in it until a guy like Costas is back?
Staying in it means like you're still within striking distance. So I sort of agree with you, Gordo, that 500 is basically like your target where you want to go for staying afloat. But even if you are a few games under 500 in that stretch, we've seen this team have a stretch of really good baseball. Like in the beginning of the season, they had a really good stretch where the pitching was dominant and the offense could hit from a relative standpoint, not mustering 3 and 4 runs a game. They were actually putting up like 6 and 7. So if they can stay within striking distance on that run, where I would say if you're 5 games out, maybe of a wild card spot, you know, regardless of where you are in the standings, that's good to me. If you're still in striking distance where you have at least the potential to want to invest and maybe go for that playoff spot, that's all you're asking for. That's all you need.
Joe, that's interesting. So for you, it's contingent as on not just the Red Sox, but the teams around them.
That's the thing is like, yeah, you can only control what you can control. But at the same time, when you get to like the trade deadline, so much of your approach there is dependent on what your competition is doing. You could go on a 10-game win streak, but if all of the other wild card teams win 9 of those 10 games, you've only gained a game. And that now you're at deadline time. If you're 5 or 6 out, they're probably selling. And that poses another conversation, which is if they get to the deadline and they're like 5 or 6 or whatever out, a lot of people are just going to say, sell, sell, sell. But this team, this organization has so many prospects that are approaching the upper minors that are going to be Rule 5 eligible. If you are going to trade expiring guys, and they've got a few guys like Tyler O'Neill, Nick Pivetta, Kenley Jansen, Chris Martin, to just rattle off a few that you could trade, but you can't trade these guys for more upper minors prospects that are going to need to be on the 40 man because you're already at such a crunch. So it's just things are going to get really, really, really tight. And I don't know if there's ever going to be a point that the Red Sox can get to where it's just a flat out, all out, blow it up sell.
Yeah, this is, I think, regardless of where they are, they're not going to blow everything up. This team could literally do what they did last year, and that was do absolutely nothing And that would be totally fine, regardless of where they are in the standings, because I think everyone sees the young talent around where they know this isn't the team. This is not going to be a team that will get you to a long postseason run and a world championship. I think everyone understands that this is a multiple-year rebuild that isn't going to be solved in 2024. Whereas for
I don't know if I agree. Well, okay, Joe, when you say 3-year rebuild, are you saying 3 years from a few years ago or 3 years like from now? Because I actually do think there's a real path for the Red Sox to be a really good team next year.
Yeah, this is year three. And from what we have seen so far in this season, this is not the year. This is not the year, but a few pieces here and there in the offseason. Because I think we all three of us agree, and probably Pat even agrees, this is not a World Series team. This is on the borderline of a playoff team. And I think fans are starting to understand that now as we're a couple of months into the year, where then you bring up those expectations once again once you get into 2025. So I'm just saying I don't want this to be a lost year, but don't be surprised if it is a lost year and they just sit on their hands at the trade deadline regardless.
Right. But then the question is though.
Go ahead.
Sit on your hands at the trade deadline is such an interesting thing, because if they sit on their hands, that means guys like Tyler O'Neill and Nick Pivetta are still here. And I think that those conversations, if the Red Sox fall a little further out of the race, those conversations are going to get interesting, because it's not as simple as you're not in a playoff spot, so just sell everything you've got when you're as close to contention as the Red Sox are. Nick Pivetta is probably a guy they want around here for a while. Tyler O'Neill, I don't think he's a long-term piece here, but Roman Anthony is not necessarily a lock to make the opening day roster next year. I'd say it's more likely than not he's not on the opening day roster. So you are going to need an outfield bat for next year. So Tyler O'Neill on a qualifying offer deal, if he sustains his level of production, that's valuable to you. You don't need to sell these guys off if you're within even like a small striking. Like if you're six out, like obviously you're not really within, you're not in playoff range, but there is a chance there.
Yeah, staying where you are will not hurt you, but it also will not help you.
See, I think it could hurt you if you don't cash in on assets when you're out of it. What are you doing? And see, I would, Gordo, I hear what you're saying, that you could keep Tyler O'Neill around, you get him on a qualifying offer. And of course, it's early to be talking about this, but we've seen how replaceable guys with his profile are. Adam Duvall, Hunter Renfro. I would say O'Neill's better than both those guys, but it's not by a huge margin.
What would you trade him for?
There's always going to be like a desperate team out there who's feels they're close to contention, wants a big right-handed bat. It's an impossible question. Yeah, I'd have to get back to you when we're closer to the deadline, but it would be...
Okay, let me rephrase that though. Let me rephrase it, make it a little bit easier. I'm not saying like specifically what guys on specific teams or whatever you're going to trade them for. I'm just saying that the Red Sox, who already are at a 40-man crunch with multiple guys on the 60-day that are going to come off come the offseason or before the offseason, you're on a 40-man crunch. Next year, there's 8 to 12 guys that reasonably need to be added. If you trade for more upper minors guys, like, yes, you could trade for lower level minors guys.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I would do lower minors guys, like get a pretty solid low minors prospect, because even when those guys do come up, we've said it before, we want these guys to be like the Braves or a team like the Astros in the last 7 years. We want them to be a team that has young guys playing at the major league level and then has an endless pipeline of guys coming up over and over and over again, and they could use them as trade assets. They could bring them up. They could keep them down. You have a lot of options if you have strong minor league system top to bottom. So I would continue to build that with O'Neill as trade bait, simply because you can replace him fairly easily at the major league level. It's not sexy and it's not exciting, but it's smart.
And an example of that would be the Red Sox last year trading away Kike Hernandez and then using one of the pieces they got for Kike Hernandez to go out there and get Tyler O'Neill. If you can do something like that with a low minors guy, like, it doesn't even have to be that. You could acquire prospect capital and then trade from the prospects you have currently in-house. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways to do it. But
all right, Gordo. So we're doing Marcelo Meyer, Tyler O'Neill for Paul Skeens. I'm just kidding. I can't wait for this offseason.
Okay, so Paul Skeens to Boston, and we roll from there.
Wait, dude, hey, I actually... So I got offered from Matt from Pesky Report offered me a trade in our fantasy league. Skeens for Rafael Devers. It's fantasy, so defense doesn't matter. I said no. I have Devers. I said no, but I'm like,
well, how many homers has Skeens hit? How many homers has Skeens hit in the last five games?
That's what I'm saying, dude. I can't give up Devers right now. I know that Skeens, like next year and the year after, I'll be super thrilled that I have Skeens, but oh, I can't give up. I can't do it. I can't. I declined.
So on the topic of pitching, because I want to say the other biggest storyline since we last spoke on this podcast has been Garrett Whitlock. After his rehab assignment, after his rehab start, it was going to be his only rehab start, coming back from an oblique. He experienced elbow soreness and they've shut him down. He's been removed from the rehab start or the rehab assignment, which obviously not a good thing. Not what Whitlock wanted. It's not, I don't know. I'm not going to tip my hand where I'm at here. Although you guys may have an idea just because you know me, but it's Whitlock going down with elbow soreness after his oblique injury. It has gotten people discussing the Whitlock starter versus reliever debate, which I want to say this is the third straight year of it. They didn't do it in 21. This is the third straight year that we've had the Whitlock starter versus reliever debate. And I don't know where you were at before and where you guys are at now. Sammy, I'll start with you. Preface it by saying where you were at before and then let me know where you're at on it now.
Preface it like at the start of the season?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe even just your history. Like where have you been on this?
Okay. So when we started, when the Red Sox got Whitlock, I liked him as closer, back end bullpen guy. Then when I, you know, you look at the body type, he's a big guy. He looks like a starting pitcher. So I was cool giving it a shot. Got hurt. Wanted to try it again. And now this year I was kind of, you know, I said it in the offseason, I'd rather him in the bullpen. Red Sox don't really sign any pitchers. The one guy they do sign gets hurt. So he's kind of forced into the rotation. So I was kind of at a, all right, we don't really have a choice kind of area. Now, third time they've tried him as a starter, third time it's ended with an injury. I want to bring up this quote. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So I don't want to be insane. Therefore, I think it's time to move him to the bullpen. However, let me hedge a little bit. I'm not saying that with supreme confidence because what is it? He's had an oblique injury. It's kind of a weird pitcher thing. And now the elbow soreness, but the elbow soreness didn't come from him throwing, you know, 45 innings over a couple weeks. It came from one outing. So what do you really know from that? Not much.
So are you saying move him to the bullpen whenever he's healthy? Or are you saying next year? Yeah. So you're saying Criswell is in the rotation and Whitlock is in the bullpen.
I'm saying, yeah, at the moment I'd keep Criswell in the rotation because he's been almost flawless, one bad start. And then I'd put Whitlock in the bullpen for now. And this is not, I'm not, you know, stern on this. I'm not like, he cannot be a starter, but if I had to choose, I mean, we've seen it three times now. It's not a skill thing, it's a health thing. So I think it's better for him if he's in the bullpen. Also, your bullpen is insane if you have Whitlock giving you two innings at a time. Nasty.
Yeah, I'm on those same lines as Sammy. Really? To see Whitlock in the bullpen, because initially I was skeptical. I was skeptical since 21 when they decided, okay, we're going to make him a starter, because he was great in the bullpen in 21 in that postseason run. And as the years went along and they stuck to the plan of keeping him a starter, I was just like, you know what? It is what it is. Let's just ride it out. And really, I would say in the past calendar year, like the last 365 days, he's pitched very well outside the injuries. When he's been on the mound, he's got nasty, nasty stuff. And he even started at the beginning of this year with a great start. But now it's just another injury after injury. And I know, as Sammy said, there are different injuries where it's an oblique, now it's an elbow. You just cannot take the chance. This is the reason you make these kinds of moves is because of what just happened with Chris Sale. And the reason you got rid of Chris Sale was for two reasons. One, money. And two, because he was always injured and he was basically kind of fragile and you couldn't really count on him to make those starts. So if you want to have him available, you move him in the bullpen. And I just want to be clear, I was the very first one who brought up the idea of doing a simple Criswell to Whitlock bullpen switch, and I want my credit for that. So I'm credit. that's where I'm riding with it. I want Criswell. I want Criswell in that fifth start, and if he gets roughed up, I want the next guy in line to be Garrett Whitlock.
The one thing I really never, ever, ever wanted was to not know. I have to give the Red Sox credit. They legitimately have tried to use Whitlock as a starting pitcher, which was the right thing to do. Results aside, he's too talented not to give him a shot. They tried it. I think for now, it's time to move him into the bullpen. So credit to them for at least giving it a go.
I'm not ready to give you credit there yet, Joe. Credit to you for coming up with it, but I'm not ready to say you're right.
Yeah, I came up with the idea, right? At least. I want that.
You came up with the idea. I'll give you credit. Ideas are
Joe was the
man.
First. He was the first Red Sox fan ever to suggest Whitlock to the bullpen.
it was crazy concept. It was a crazy concept when you came up with it, Joe, and you were really ballsy for saying it. And honestly, you put yourself at risk. Like, there could be some angry people out there. And you put yourself at risk. So I give you credit for that. But no, I don't think I'm ready to put Whitlock in the bullpen yet. I almost feel, Sam, you said the definition of insanity. I actually do almost feel insane staying here. But I can't get there yet. I watch the guy pitch. He's got a five-pitch mix. He has a starter's pitch mix. He's got a starter's body. You've seen what Andrew Bailey did with other guys. You see what he did with Cutter Crawford. You see what he did with Tanner Houck. And you saw it with Whitlock too. And players were saying to the media that of all the people that have made the biggest step forward, Andrew Bailey, Whitlock was probably number one. And we saw it for a little bit, a 1.96 ERA in his first four starts before he went down. It kills me that we haven't continued to see it. But I just, to preface it, I want to say when Whitlock went into the rotation in 22, I was all for it. I thought he was going to be Red Sox ace. 23, I was for continuing to try it. In the offseason, I wanted to see, like before this year, I wanted to see them add more. I wanted to see them add a full rotation of guys that we could trust because I thought the rebuild was over. Turns out they disagreed with me. They thought the rebuild needed at least one more year. So at that point, they didn't get much. Yeah, fucking yay.
2 years away from 2 years away.
We love rebuilds. We love rebuilds.
But you know what? To their credit, them continuing to try these guys as starters has resulted in them unearthing potentially multiple frontline guys. And Whitlock could be that too. How can Cutter? You don't think Cutter? Yeah, I said potentially. Potentially.
Okay. All right. Okay. But Gordo, here's the problem. It's not a skill issue. Gamer term.
Let me get to that point. You say it's a health issue. Why do people just like assume that bullpen pitchers, that relievers are less susceptible to injury than starting pitchers? They're going up and down more. They're getting hot and getting cold more often than starting pitchers. Like, I get it. They're not throwing 100 pitches in an outing, but
yeah, that's the answer. Me, it's the workload. Dude, you're totally right.
Injured all over the place. It's not just the elbow. Right.
For some of the guys, it's the routine that messes them up. For other guys, it's the workload. And for Whitlock, it seems clear at this point that it's more of a workload issue.
But I just don't even know. Like, I know that, but why do you say that it's a workload issue when out of all of these injuries that he's had, I want to say the elbow was only a problem twice. It was a problem twice. Once now when it's soreness and we don't know how far this is going to go, and once last year. The only other time it had to do with his arm was when it was his shoulder, but that was in 21 when he was coming out of the bullpen.
Right, but I know correlation doesn't always equate to causation, but still, like, every time he's been in the rotation, whether it's an arm, a shoulder, oblique, whatever, he's gotten some sort of injury. So to me, being out there for a long time puts him at a higher risk of injury, and that's not the same for everybody. Like I just said, for some guys, the routine of being a starting pitcher is better for them. You pitch once every 5 days, same thing every time, consistency. For others, being in the bullpen, pitching less innings, that's better for them. And I just think Whitlock sounds like the latter right now. Every time he's been a starter, he's gone down with some sort of injury. So maybe he needs a decreased workload.
But Sammy, every time he's been a reliever, he's gone down with an injury too.
Well, we've seen him. We've seen him as a reliever. How much? Like not
twice.
Yeah, I know. But it seems pretty clear that it's like when he pitches deep into games is when the injuries start to pop up. Most of the time, he's probably going to be a guy who deals with injuries for the duration of his major league career. That's the sad part about it. But to keep
right there, though. I don't think it's a workload is leading to this or this is. I think he's just an injury prone pitcher. And like I hate
That's much easier to manage in a bullpen role rather than a starting rotation role. It's easier to bring a guy up from AAA who can be successful in the bullpen rather than bring a guy up from AAA who you're like, dude, we need 4 or 5 innings from you today. Good luck.
It gives you more availability to have those lesser roles in the bullpen or those lesser outings. Cause I'm on Sammy's role with this one. It's all about the workload for Whitlock.
I feel like you guys are just saying, like, we don't know that.
No, we don't know. It's an educated guess. It's not like, you know, we're not just throwing shit at the wall. We're just deducing, okay, it seems like when he has an increased workload is when the injuries quickly start to crop up. It's worth to see if he can stay healthy for the rest of the season in a bullpen role. I think that might be smart. Just to, like, I hate
the injuries come when he pitches out.
What's up?
The injuries come when he pitches. Like, I don't know if it's a workload thing. The injuries come when he pitches. And
if the injuries come when he pitches, pitch less.
But the injury, but he's going to be pitching more days.
Less chances.
He'll be pitching more often.
Less innings.
Fewer innings, but more days. Like, we don't know what it's going to lead to. Like, we just have.
It's like quite a Crawford. I can't talk today. Again, this is like the second time in 3 episodes that I've been tongue-tied. But it's like what Cutter Crawford said yesterday in the postgame. He's trying to get off the mound as quick as possible, do his job. For Whitlock, same thing, but it's also maintain his health. The less time he's out there, the better. Just a guess, but an educated guess.
Here's the thing. I agree with you. I want to go back to a point you made before about if he goes down when he's in the bullpen, it's easier, especially with the way the Red Sox infrastructure stands today, to bring a reliever up to cover for whatever Whitlock's role is in the bullpen than it is to bring someone up to start. Like right now, I don't want to say they lucked into Criswell because like clearly that was a targeted guy who they thought they could work with and it worked. But next year, Cooper Criswell is out of options. I know he signed a 1-year, $1 million deal, but he's got all this team control because he hasn't hit his full 6 years of service time to hit free agency. But he's out of options. So he's going to have to be in the majors next year, assuming he is still in the organization. So you're going to have to figure out a role for him. You're not going to have Cooper Criswell sitting in the minors to call up. Ideally, you develop pitching that is more major league ready than the current pipeline of pitching is. And maybe you sign another version of Cooper Criswell, but that's a big ask. So no, I'll give you credit there.
Much less of an ask than like, I mean, to me, signing another Criswell is a lower ask than asking Whitlock to again try to become a starter for the 4th time.
But it's hard to sign a Criswell because you have to get a guy with options. Like it can't just be like we'll use Chase Anderson, for example. If you got him on a minor league deal, it's like you bring him up, but then you can't option him back. You have to DFA him. Whereas Criswell, if they want to send him back, you can option him.
That's not enough reason to play a guy in a role that doesn't suit him. I don't think you can be like, dude, it's tough to find a depth starter.
No. That would be an argument for you to put Whitlock in the bullpen. I just think you need to have a pipeline of starting pitching you need to have like 8, 9, 10 guys who you can confidently.
Dodgers. Start. Look at the Dodgers. Dodgers get an injury. Oh, screw you. Here's our top 50 prospect, Gavin Stone or whoever. Exactly. Oh, he's not good. We got another one waiting in our wherever we play AAA games. Boom.
There you go. That's the answer. Is if you can have a pipeline, like if you can have pitching depth like that, then you don't have to lose out on the potential of what Garrett Whitlock could be as a starter just because you're so unprepared for what could happen if he goes down. This year, they are prepared for what happens if he goes down. But in future years, they may not be, but they have to be.
I think the disconnect is that I don't conflate those two things. I don't think you could put any of that on Whitlock. I think that like that's like the Tyler O'Neill trade. You want to have a system like that, like you just described, trade a guy in an expiring deal like Tyler O'Neill, get a low mid minors, like double A pitcher who's close ish to ready, not a superstar. There's your depth. You keep doing moves like that, then you actually go out there and sign guys in free agency or make an impactful trade in the offseason. God for friggin' bid. I'm having flashbacks to the offseason, but that's how you do it. I don't want any of that to determine what Whitlock does. He should be in the role that suits him best. End of discussion. Everything else, addressing depth, addressing the rotation, that is on Breslow. That's on him and his team. That's separate from Whitlock, in my opinion.
What do you think Whitlock's ceiling as a starter is?
Like, if he stays healthy? Like,
yeah.
Stays healthy. I think he could be great. I just don't think the chances of him being healthy are likely.
A number what starter? Like,
three. Like, he can be a very good number three starter. Kind of like
he's a guy that you can, you hope for at least five innings out of him. So that's like a back of the end rotation kind of guy. I'm thinking like four or five.
But
he's
kind of
like Bayo, honestly. Like a similar mix to Bayo. Think about it. It's kind of a weird comparison, but a guy who pitches nasty changeup, mid to high 90s fastball, also has a slider that he doesn't use as often, but he still uses it. What's the term that they were calling Whitlock's slider? Bullet slider?
Yeah, the bullet slider.
Weird. Weird. It's such like a tight slider. But
you got to remember, though. Remember, a couple years ago when they first tried Whitlock in the rotation, the comp was Rick Porcello, and Whitlock idolizes Rick Porcello, wants to be like Rick Porcello, and that's what the Red Sox saw in him. I don't think that's a guy that caps himself, but I don't think that's a guy that you're going to see go five innings a start. I know that's what he had done this year, but I think Whitlock at his ceiling is a guy who can eat a bunch of innings for you. I don't know if his health is going to let you do that, but his pitch mix and the way he pitches allows him to get deeper into games. Again, we'll see if the health allows him to do
it. But that's not the discussion. I think all three of us agree that if you turned off injuries, then Whitlock would be a great starting pitcher. And we'd be very confident every time he pitches. It's a matter of staying on the field. He hasn't been able to do it. And I think you have a better chance of him staying on the field if he pitches less innings. Ergo, I would move him into the bullpen now.
And like you had with Chris Sale, as I said before, the reason why you got rid of him was because he could not stay healthy. Or one of the reasons was he could not stay healthy.
And then bam, he's healthy. Whoa, what a concept.
Come but on, you can't just bank on that.
Everybody's gonna
That's what I keep saying, though, is you can't bank on him being healthy. So you have the answer to that is not to let this potential number three, maybe even number two, if things really break right, starter. You can't just toss him. The answer is not to just toss that into the bullpen. The answer is to build a pipeline in place so that when he goes down, you're not caught with your pants down. Remember,
so what would you do right now? If you were the Red Sox, let's say Whitlock comes back, are you putting him right back in the rotation and then sending down Criswell, even though Criswell has been great?
Yes.
Okay.
That's yes.
And what if Whitlock gets hurt again?
Then you call Criswell back up.
And then
you're not putting him in the bullpen at all, regardless of injuries or not.
Whitlock or Criswell?
Whitlock.
No, I'm not putting Whitlock in the bullpen. Certainly not this year. If he comes back and pitches to like a low to mid four ZRA and gets hurt again, then it's like, it is what it is. But to be honest with you, the answer could be that maybe you get him through the season. He looks good and you don't feel that great about the injury thing and you trade him.
See, I don't think, I don't think he's super athletic, you know, like the way he moves. It's not like Houck when he moves and Cutter when he moves, they're so fluid. They look like athletes. Whitlock's always looked a little clunky, if that makes sense. Like a little like Brandon Belt when he moved around on the field, didn't look the greatest, but the results were good. So you
Whitlock
didn't care.
And Brandon Belt.
I know, weird comparison. Totally different players. I'm just talking about the body type and the way they move. I don't know if he's ever going to be able to stay healthy. It's, and again, just to hedge for all three of us, these are just educated guesses. There's no way to know. He could come back as a starting pitcher and be healthy for the next 5 years, and I would be like, okay, well, fine. It's just that it's so hard after three attempts as a starting pitcher for me to see him lasting. And again, it's so much easier. If Gordo, if your theory about it's just he's not a healthy guy, regardless of role, it's so much easier to manage that over a long season if he's a reliever. I'd just rather go into the season with a rotation of guys that I have at least an inkling of faith that will stay healthy. You know, it's impossible.
It's more comfortable.
Tell.
It's more comfortable. But let me make one more point about it because, yes, it is more comfortable. Back in 2022, when they first moved him to the rotation, the big issue that people had with that was, yes, you're putting him in the rotation and that's great, but he was so important in that bullpen. And in the second he was removed from the bullpen, you really missed him. Like, you didn't have that setup guy. You didn't have that multi-inning guy. You were caught. That bullpen was caught with its pants down without Garrett Whitlock in it. Whereas this year, like with the emergence of Zach Kelly, with the emergence of Brennan Bernardino, with the emergence of Justin Slayton, like, this bullpen is deep. Like, Whitlock would just be one of a bunch of guys in there.
Gordo, just say it. With the emergence of the Play Tessie bump.
With the emergence of the Play Tessie bump, with all of these guys in the bullpen, there's just, it's Whitlock being in the bullpen would be just another guy. You would still be sending down I don't want to say a major, like, they're better than major, like above average reliever.
I got one for you. What if he's the closer? So you trade Kenley. Now Whitlock still has a huge role. He's just in the bullpen. And you have Slayton giving you the seventh or eighth inning. And then you go to Whitlock. So he's pitching less innings and he's still in a big, big, big role where you're getting a lot of value out of him.
I just don't see, like, he's got a good five pitch mix. Like, I just feel like that's wasted in a 1-2 inning role.
But it's
the rotation, with the rotation as good as it is right now, he would return as just another guy because he's getting overshadowed by Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford and, to an extent, Cooper Criswell.
Okay, well, that's another thing is do we? I've been so impressed with what Cooper Criswell has done. I really, really have. But we haven't seen him go 100 pitches, seven innings. Like, we haven't seen him go deep into the starts. They've won the games.
We've barely seen Whitlock do that. He's done that a handful of times. It's not that big of a difference. I think Whitlock's more
talented. We have seen it, though.
By the way, I don't think it's fair to say it's a waste if a guy has five pitches in the bullpen. It's a bigger waste if they're not pitching. If they're on the field and they're healthy and they got five pitches in the bullpen, look, man, I think that Whitlock has all the skill in the world and he could be a starting pitcher, but he doesn't have the health for it. How many more times? I want him to be a starting pitcher, but I feel insane advocating for it for a fourth time. It's so much.
I think that in the offseason, it could be a different story. It's just that during the season, if you put it like at this point with this team, you said it yourself, like, Whitlock has the talent, he has the ceiling. With this season, with this team, with where it looks like it's going, why would you not try to tap into that ceiling and figure it out in the offseason?
To keep him healthy, to let him stay on the field and be on the roster.
Get him as close to 100% as you can.
Yeah, and then if they want to try it again next year, they go, oh my God, he's fully healthy. Let's give it a fourth try. I won't love that, but go for it.
If he doesn't stay healthy and have a good finish to the season, I will not stay on. Like, I'll do what I did last year and say I want the Red Sox to sign a starter that they can depend on for his spot if he can't stay healthy for the rest of the year. For this year, they're a 500 team. He's clearly got he's one of the best five starting pitchers they have, especially in terms of ceiling. Why would you not try to tap into that? And if you don't think he can stay healthy, then you trade him in the offseason and maybe your rotation next year is you just swap in Giolito for Whitlock and re-sign Pivetta. I don't know.
That's fine. Who knows? What about this? Would you want to turn Slayton into a starting pitcher? Because to me, very similar to Whitlock. You got him in the Rule 5 draft. Slayton's got four pitches, not five. Still a lot. Nasty out of the bullpen, goes multiple innings. We've seen him go as many as, what, three in an outing this year?
I've thought about it before. I have, but he wasn't a starter in the minors. It hasn't been who he is for a while. So I feel like it'd be a little bit of a stretch to try it. Maybe if the Red Sox weren't, I'm not going to pull out like the big market, big pockets conversation, but if they had the Pirates budget, then like maybe, but there's just no reason.
Yeah, I agree. Slayton's better on the bullpen.
I understand where you're going with that because it is a similar, because Slayton does feel like, maybe like I see why they try to get multiple innings out of him. It does feel like one inning. Like there's a difference between having Slayton try to go multiple innings and having to try to push Weissert for multiple innings. Like I feel like Weissert is like definitely best suited as a one inning guy, whereas Slayton you could push a little bit.
Oh, wow. Jalen Brunson out for the rest of the game, fractured his left hand.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Sorry. I check Twitter once in a while while we're recording just in case anything happens. That's a totally unrelated one. But yeah, Gordo, I mean, this is just a hypothetical. Slayton, nasty, four pitches, big body. Why'd they put him in the bullpen? Maybe they thought he couldn't stay healthy, and the best thing to do would be to put him in a role where he could stay healthy and still contribute. Just saying.
Nah, he was a reliever in the minors. They'd be really.
No, that's what I'm saying, is like his minor league teams. But no, I think there's a fair point on each side. We should totally do a poll on Play Tessie's Twitter.
Rocked in that poll. I understand that I'm in the minority on this.
Fair, the points you're making are sound. I just, for me, the number one priority, to put a bow on this, the number one priority for me, if I'm the Red Sox, would be to keep that guy, Garrett Whitlock, on the active roster as much as possible. And I think the best way to do that would be to not have him pitching 5, 6, 7 innings a night. I'd rather him pitch more days, less innings. So just my two cents.
And to put a bow on it from my perspective, I will say that if the Red Sox were like a first place team and we're World Series contenders and really going for it, what I would be advocating for is to get a starting pitcher at the deadline and to put Whitlock in the bullpen. It's mainly just a where the team is at thing for me, is to try to tap into ceilings. Like them not putting Houck in the bullpen got them what Tanner Houck is today. But there's a couple of things I think we could get to before the preview of the next series. The first thing is, any thoughts on the Red Sox winning the Roku game? And I believe they're 2-0 in national TV games. Has there been a third? They had a Sunday night game.
Dude, Sunday sucks. They have not lost on Sunday yet. I'm pretty sure they're
undefeated. 2-0. Undefeated. Yeah. And I've been in the studio every single Sunday. So
Sunday sucks. It's a thing. I do think we need to talk about Rafael Devers, because I said something, you know, fairly negative about him. I want to give him his love. Holy shit. He's on fire right now. Rafael Devers, home runs in 5 consecutive games. That is a Red Sox record. I don't know who he tied, but he tied the record.
Bobby.
And no. Canseco.
Bobby.
There's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them.
Well, either way.
Yeah, there's a few.
Hopefully on Monday, he breaks the record 6 in a row against Tampa, and then all the bad luck will turn around and the Red Sox will beat Tampa Bay, just like back when they were the Devil Rays. And we'll be so happy when we record. They certainly won't have lost that series. Oh, wouldn't that be great? But yeah, Rafael Devers after today, 939 OPS. The guy is just one of the best bats in the world. There's not much else to say about it. I mean, he's a thousand times better when he's not swinging out of his shoes and just making contact because the ball flies.
I mean, I'm starting to think also that he's as healthy, probably 100% as possible, because he basically came into the year injured, and then he had that stretch with his shoulder, and yeah, it's taken a little bit longer, but to me, he just looks, as you said, Sam, he's not swinging out of his shoes every single time. These home runs look absolutely effortless with his swings, and part of me thinks that he just feels much more comfortable, and his body is exactly where it needs to be.
It's hard to argue with that, Joe. I really like that you brought up that point about the injuries, because it's easy to forget about that. It's easy to forget that he was injured. Not only did he have, like, we all remember the collision with O'Neill, but yeah, he had the knee thing, he had the shoulder thing, like that. He was a banged up guy, and it was April, and they had to sit him down for a while. They didn't IL him because they wanted him back as soon as possible, but they sat him down, and that has proven to have worked and to have really paid dividends, because he is as hot right now as he's been in a long time. I believe he had four straight games with a homer, I believe 3 other times, but I think none since 2022. So this is the first time in a while that he's gotten hot like this. It's great to see. Like, he is, even though it's like, it feels like whenever there's guys on and two outs, he's not coming through. The overall numbers are great. He's proving that he's still one of the best hitters on the planet. He is the star of the Red Sox. He is a superstar. Don't let anyone tell you that he's not.
I can't wait until he's a DH only and grows a beard. Oh,
I hate both of those takes. He's our baby. Let him be a baby.
Nah, no, I want him to, like, come into spring training. I want him to have that dangly Barry Bonds cross earring, and then
he can do that.
Fucking beard, and just like angry all of a sudden. He's like, "That's it. I'm sick of going easy on the rest of the league. I'm hitting 56 home runs this year." By the way, defense is 12th percentile still.
Yeah, I checked on that to see if I could make an argument there, and then I was like, "Oh shit!"
Yeah, I had a feeling you would. Hey, at least he's not making errors.
They gave him an error. Remember, we were at the game, and on the play that Cooper it looked like Cooper just like dropped the ball and was randomly hurt. They gave him a throwing error for that.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on that because it wasn't a good throw, and he did drag Cooper into the base path, which you're taught not to do. But like, you're a major league first baseman, you could make that play, Koopa loop.
Also,
but yeah,
like,
it's
could have been a hit. Like, just give him a
never,
hit.
I just don't think he's ever going to be a good defender. And if he's, you know, not taking runs away from the other team, if he's not giving away runs, whatever. It's not that big of a deal.
I don't think he's ever going to be a good defender. I think he can hold your head above water, which he's done this year to this point. Obviously, we know he's prone to the extended stretches of errors, so we'll see if that comes.
Hey, if you go off of percentages, he's tripled what he put out last year because he was fourth percentile outs above average. And by the way, if you're listening and you're like, what the hell are outs above average percentiles? What are these guys talking about? Outs above average is like, it's a good way to describe it. How many outs you get that's better than the average player at your position. So Devers being 12th percentile, he's actually getting you less outs than the average MLB third baseman. But if he were 80th percentile, he's getting you 30% more outs than the average defensive third baseman in Major League Baseball.
So there's also like a legitimate, like they do have the number of outs. Right now he is minus 3 outs above average. So he is, to this point, gotten you 3 outs less than your average third baseman.
So an inning. So he's basically cost them an inning of outs, which sounds
That's
small.
All you're asking for. That is all you're asking for. You're not looking for elite defense over there at third base.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I'm just looking for not terrible. That's really right.
As much as I advocate to move him to DH because I think he'd be better served there, he's not going to move to DH, at least not for the next like 3-4 years, maybe even more than that. They've committed too much money, and the Red Sox are notoriously stubborn with shit like this. So he's going to be the third baseman for a while. So I think it would be best for everybody if we do like Gordo did, drop our standards for his defense very, very low, and just say, like, if he's not killing the team, fine. And he's not. So I'm good with it right now.
Yeah, not killing the team. I would rather Devers, if he's playing not good but not awful defense, and them get a great hitter to be the DH, than them get an okay hitter to play third base and play better defense. But that's a conversation for another day, because that's an offseason. Like, that's not something that they're going to do this year. It's probably not something they're going to do next year. Like, it would probably be...
No, they'll get Alex Bregman. 30. It'll be fine. They'll get Alex Bregman. He'll be the 90th. He's 90th percentile. That's above average. I know he's not hitting well now, but he's going to come around. Come on, were you crazy? So
yeah, he will.
When he's the third baseman,
like
the defense
whole Astros
is...
team.
Oh, man. Can you imagine how good the Bregman and either Story or Meyer at short, and then you got Casas, who's been a good defender at first when he's healthy. And oh, love that.
Yeah, I mean, they were already talking on the broadcast today about how good the outfield defense has been. Like, don't let it go unnoticed that Jaron Duran has played some of the best outfield defense in baseball. And when he's out there with Rafaela and Willier, because Willier plays great right field defense, that outfield has been...
And by the way,
they move a rise around there and they just get it
done. Yes, it's not just been Duran in left or center. He's gone back and forth, and he's given them 97th percent.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Don't expect too much. He's a guy who goes up and down with the defense too, so I would expect that to regress a little bit, but god damn, man, 97th percentile Jaron Duran. And that's a tricky at Fenway. That's tricky because left is weird in its own way. Center at any ballpark is tough. So like, god, so much credit to him. Those are legitimate improvements.
Yeah, and he's done it for multiple years in a row now. Because remember, I mean, he was another guy who a couple years ago, he was towards the bottom in all of those metrics. And like, the arm has never been there. And it probably, I mean, it's been better this year.
How many outs has he added? What's your guess, the number, without looking? If you've looked, you're not able to answer. It's a lot. It's a lot more than I would have guessed. No, not that. I hate when I do that, when I'm like, it's a lot. And then someone guesses way over. And I'm like, okay, it's not that cool. What'd you say, Joe?
Are we looking at like four or five?
Five.
Ooh.
That's pretty good, man. That's almost two innings worth of outs.
Pull up his 2022 and tell us where he was at percentile-wise and outs above average.
There's no percent. He didn't qualify, but he gave negative two outs. And then last year, he was actually slightly above average. Actually, he was right at average. 57th percentile. Yeah. Didn't cost them any outs. Didn't get them any outs. A flat zero. And now he's at five. So anything positive with him, I think that's great. Because lest we forget, he was a guy that we were like, oh my God, he cannot play center field. Everyone knows about the infamous, what was it, Raimel Tapia fly ball. Again, when they're playing the Blue Jays and
the Blue Jays.
Toronto Blue Jays.
The Blue Jays?
Oh, Gordo, gross.
That's what you said. You said it. So yeah, Jarren Duran impacting the game literally in all three phases. Hitting the ball, a menace on the base pass, one of the best base runners in baseball, and he's been, to this point, one of the best.
Like, he should be your leadoff guy for the next 5 or 7 years, at least.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole different combo. I think one thing I noticed with him, we know about how he's been open about it. He struggles with mental stuff here and there, confidence issues sometimes. I noticed that he got caught, I think, one or two times stealing, got picked off once and then thrown out once. And he kind of has really slowed down the amount of attempts at steals he's made. And now that they've taken Devers out of the two spot, moved him to the four spot, I think you'll see Duran run more. And the reason I mentioned Devers is because if you're Jarren Duran, you're like one of the fastest baseball players in the world, and you're on first base and Rafael Devers is up, stealing second doesn't do as much because Devers hits so many home runs and he hits so many doubles and Duran is scoring on either of those. But if he's fourth and you got like Willier Abreu or like Ref Snyder batting second, more likely that they send Duran to steal. So that's what I'm looking for in the coming days.
Yeah, I really liked the move of Devers to four for that exact reason. Because every time Jarren got on first, my first instinct is he should go. And then I would see who steps up to the plate and it's Devers. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, you don't want to run with Devers up to bat. But like, also, what if Devers hits a single through the hole? Then it matters. But then what if Duran gets thrown out?
Because now if Devers is four, you've got more of a, like you said, Ref Snyder or Willier. Perfect. Jarren Duran steals second. Those guys get lots of hits. You go from there.
You know what would be great? Let me know what you guys think about this. When Costas comes back, if he bats second, and then you get Duran gets on first, and then you have the pitcher being like, crap, I have to throw strikes because Costas won't swing at balls, but I also have to keep an eye on Jarren Duran because he could run at any time. And then Duran like steals second, and then the pitcher's probably like, fuck it, I'll just walk Costas. I'm not going to strike him out. So I don't know. I think that would be... I like that.
But yeah, I might feel the same way, though, of not wanting Jarren to run with Costas up. I do understand, like, it's a little bit different because Costas is super patient. Like,
the eye is the dip. But you know who would be the absolute perfect number two hitter behind Jarren Duran?
Mike Trout.
Xander Bogaerts. I hate to say it. Perfect. The perfect fit. So, I don't know, man.
Those numbers this year. Look at Xander.
He wouldn't be hitting like that if he were still in Boston with the monster and that.
I hope.
Big right field.
All right, you guys ready to preview this Rays series?
Let's do it.
I can't wait.
Yeah, man. It's not like we haven't seen these guys recently. Tampa Bay Rays. They're above 500 now, 25-23. They did just take 2 out of 3 from the Blue Jays. They did lose the finale.
Are they the Brew Jays?
They're the Brew Jays now. Alek Manoah, 7 scoreless against the Rays today. He might be back. That'll be interesting. He's had a couple of good starts since his return, but not on the Rays. The Rays lost that game 5-2. However, they were on a 5-game win streak before that. Or maybe it was 4. I don't know. Whatever. Pitchers, Tanner Houck versus Taj Bradley. Tanner Houck has a 2.17 ERA coming off of 5 2/3 innings of 3-run ball. Only one of those runs was earned. He struck out 7. That was against Tampa Bay. He faced Taj Bradley in that game, who threw only 2 starts. He has a 2.45 ERA. He went 5 innings, 2 runs, and 6 strikeouts against the Red Sox. So that is a rematch. You've got another rematch in game 2. Cooper Criswell and his 2.76 ERA coming off his only not great start of the season. 3 2/3, 5 runs, 3 of which were earned, and 3 strikeouts against his former team, the Tampa Bay Rays. Versus Zach Littell, former Red Sox, who has a 3.44 ERA, and he's coming off a five-inning, four-earned run, three-strikeout start against the Red Sox in that same matchup last time out. Third game is the only matchup of pitchers who did not face off in the previous series. You got Brian Bello versus Ryan Pepiot, or who I believe is going to be Ryan Pepiot. It's not been announced yet, but I believe he's going to come off the injured list and make his return in that third game against the Red Sox. Brian Bello, 3.96 ERA, coming off a poor start in St. Louis, in which he allowed a career high, or he tied his career high in home runs allowed. He threw 4 2/3, 5 earned runs, 4 strikeouts against the St. Louis Cardinals, who we talked about, not a very good offensive team. So that was not an ideal start for Bello on his birthday. Ryan Pepiot seems likely to make his return. He's got a 3.68 ERA in his final start, in which he got smoked with a 107 mile an hour comebacker off the bat of Starling Marte. He went 2 innings, 3 runs versus the Mets. So we will see if he comes back and makes that start, but I think it's trending that way. Hitters to watch, there's obviously Johnny DeLuca, 858 OPS in the last week, though it's only 15 at-bats. He seems like a guy who just kind of comes in these games late and gets a couple at-bats, gets the occasional start.
He's my least favorite guy ever. I don't know anything about him, but you guys know why I hate him, because
that's for Johnny DeLuca.
We have Johnny DeLuca.
He's got to create a player ass name, and he's going to torture the Red Sox at some point. I'm positive of it.
Sammy, you know why we hate Johnny DeLuca? Because there's no other reason why. Johnny DeLuca is balls, baby.
Johnny DeLuca is balls.
He's not the balls. He's balls.
He's just balls, dude. All right. Should I go first?
Hold on. I'll give you a couple rundown. Isak Paredes in the last week, 1,000 OPS. Josh Lowe. He was a weapon against the Sox. He has a 779 OPS over the last week. Yandy Diaz has a 757 OPS in the last week. Randy Arozarena, ice cold, 478 OPS in the last week. Ahmed Rosario, been kind of a part-time guy, but he's been pretty good in the spots that they've put him in. He's at a 945 OPS in the last four games that he has played. So let's do predictions here. But first, Joe, do we have a score update here? None of us. We were all...
No one scored any points in the series against the Cardinals. So Sammy is still leading it with 7. Pat is going to remain idle at 4. Gordo, you've got 2. And I am right behind you with 1.
Joe's going to catch me. And he's only going to found a few shows and he's going to catch me.
I'll do my best. I'll only do what I can. But yes, Sammy, why don't you get us started here with these predictions?
Tropicana Field, man. How could you possibly feel good about the Red Sox going into the Trop? Ugh, I'm going to say, I think the Red Sox salvaged the last game, but that's it. I think they lose the first two, and then they eke out the last one for a happy flight. But it's going to be ugly and painful, like a date with Ursula from Little Mermaid, baby, that big octopus chick. That's what it's going to feel like going out with her.
Oh, man.
Out of all people to reference.
I was trying to think of a family-friendly but also gross figure that we could go on a date with, but I also didn't want to offend anyone, so I figured Ursula was a good safe area, because who's closely connected to Ursula? Unless you're like listening and you're saying, I played Ursula at Disney when I was an actor in college. What the fuck? Sorry to you.
Oh, well then. All right. Gordo, transition out of that one.
I'll go second here, and you guys can thank me later. I'm going to predict a Tampa Bay Rays sweep of the Boston Red Sox here. I have been notoriously wrong almost every single time that we have done these predictions. I cannot predict the series right. I don't love any of these matchups for the Sox. I understand I know my role. I'm going to go with a race sweep, and when we record the next podcast, I'll take my flowers.
Okay. All right, then.
Joe, what do you got?
If you say so. I am on the same radar as Sammy. I'll go 2 out of 3, but I'm going to change the games up. I think this is a Sox team that prides themselves on having momentum and getting double-digit runs for only the third time in their season, I think, is going to help. So I think they're going to win Game 1, but it's games 2 and 3 I'm not feeling good about. As Sammy said, the Trop is basically like a torture chamber for the Red Sox. I think Cooper Criswell, I think he's going to pitch well, but he's not going to pitch well enough in game two. And then the same thing with Brian Bayo. Just, I feel like the Rays are one of those teams, at least for Bayo specifically, that are always going to give him trouble. So I say game one is a Red Sox victory, but they will lose the following two after that.
All right. So none of us optimistic about this series.
This is the most,
it could be a good thing.
This is the most universally negative series prediction. Because all the other ones, I feel like we've had legitimately intelligent reasons to feel like the Red Sox would do well. This one, no, I'm struggling.
And if this was Fenway, if it was Fenway again, I would say maybe they win two out of three. But the thing is, the trop is just, it's a dump of a ballpark, but they lose all the time.
It's so stupid, dude. I hate the fucking trop so much. It's ugly. It's ugly and dumb. Dumb and ugly, in fact.
I'm at the point with this team where until that, like, they, I'm not going to be predicting series wins until they show me that they can win a series. Just show me you can win a series and maybe. But at this point, if they win the series, maybe I'll just keep predicting them to lose series and then we'll see where we go from there.
Who's after Tampa?
Here, hold on. I got you. No, I don't.
No, I believe I'll get a few. I'm going to say it's the Brewers.
You
want your bats to heat up? You want the bats to heat up? Tampa.
They're back at Fenway. Back at Fenway.
Okay, that's good.
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
All right, fellas.
Always, they always show up really well at Fenway. Brewers fans, it's bizarre. Anyway,
it's just the National League because they're so rare.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, fellas. It's that time. Someone's going to have to say it. It's time for Crystal Bomb.
Bomb it.
Nice. This is where we predict a Red Sox player to hit a home run in the upcoming series. I'm going to kick it to Joe Braverman, who's got a score update for us, in which Sammy did pretty well this past series.
Sammy did do well because he was the only one to get on the board of the Crystal Bomb, and with it, he has tied Pat with 3 Crystal Bombs on the year. He is sitting in second. I should say they're both in second, chasing Gordo, who's got 7, and then there is me with 1.
I am, what is it, coming up the rear, Pat. Here I come. Holding.
You already did it. You came up the rear. You did it.
And now I'm here. How fantastic is that?
So you know what? You're on the hot streak. Why don't you get us started then?
Okay, I'm taking Rafael Devers. Come on. The hell? I'm on a hot streak. He's on a hot streak. I got it. I can't take O'Neill. Can't take Thick Willie. I'm taking Rafi. By the way, I have never cashed in on a Rafi crystal ball. Bomb. Crystal bomb ball. So this is my time.
You're about to go on a 3-game bomb streak. Because Devers likes the trop too. And he's hit home runs in 5 straight games. Mm. So yeah, you're probably gonna get that one. I'm gonna go with Thick Willie here. I think Thick Willie, you got some right-handed pitchers on the mound. I like my chances at a Thick Willie home run. I've cashed in Thick Willie before. I could go with O'Neill because he's coming off a game with a homer. I could pick him, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go with Thick Willie here.
All right, that's not bad. I'm going to go a little bit off the board here. I'm going to say Garrett Cooper. I think Cooper's heating up. He's starting to swing the bat really, really good. Had a couple of RBI hits in the past week or so. I think now is the time for him to get his first bomb with the Red Sox. So give me Garrett Cooper for the Crystal Bomb.
All right, I love it. So we've got, to recap, Sammy going with Devers. Gordo, I am taking Thick Willie. And Joe Braverman, he's taking Garrett Cooper. On that note, Sammy, what's it time for?
Unlike the Red Sox, for most of this series, there are no losers in this segment. It's guys being dudes.
Cha.
Yeah.
All right. So this is tough because
that sounded like a nay. Like, yeah.
It was literally so last minute. I was just like, yeah.
This is time for horses being horses with Play Tessie.
It's time for the Celtics to kick the crap out of Indiana. They just won. So that's your matchup, folks. Celtics versus Pacers. Anyway, you got to pick a player who has played for the Boston Red Sox and the Tampa Bay Devil Rays / Rays. Who would like to start?
I'll kick it off. Why not?
Do it, Gordo.
I'm going to go with Matt Andrees. Yeah, he was a Rays, I don't want to say staple, but he was a few years with the Rays. pitched pretty well for them, signed with the Red Sox. Most known in Boston, at least at this point, for teaching Garrett Whitlock his changeup. I reminiscing about the Matt Andrees era. He comes to Boston as a Heim Bloom signing, and he pitches in March and April of 2021 to a 1.42 ERA. He was getting big spots in that bullpen, and you felt pretty good when Matt Andrees was coming to the game. After that, after the month of April, that was that. Fell apart. Sox DFA'd him, and by the time they did it, he had a 6.03 ERA in 26 games. Wildly, did not pitch in 2022 or 2023 at the big league level. Somehow, through three games this year for the Marlins. I have no idea how Matt Andrees and Colton Brewer both threw big league innings in the year 2024, but that is where we're at. So I'm going Matt Andrees.
That's great. I love
that. Not bad. I'll go next for this one. I'm going to go with someone who was maybe a minor return in the Nick Punto trade of 2012, where Adrian Gonzalez, Nick Punto, Josh Beckett, all of them went to the Dodgers. And you know, outside of Ruby De La Rosa, there was one name that was returned to the Red Sox from the Dodgers, and that was James Loney. Basically, Loney finished as the team's first baseman for that year, which was a lost year. And then he's looking for a home in 2013. He signs with the Rays and is a very serviceable first baseman, I would say, in 2013 with the Rays, and just serviceable in general from his time with the Dodgers. That core in the mid to late 2000s of Loney, Andre Ethier, Matt Kemp should not be overlooked. So James Loney is my GBD pick. Someone very underrated in the time that he was playing.
Lonely James. Yeah, he was a good ball player for a while. But that's that. The memory of him on the Red Sox is
oh god, no. Those are bad times to remember.
Yeah. Oh, all right, god. here's mine. I want to see if you guys can guess my guy before I say the name. Played 10 seasons in Major League Baseball. Is a 3-time All Star. Won 1 Silver Slugger, 2 Gold Gloves. Who am I thinking about? And he debuted in 2004 as a rookie. Got like a cup of coffee. Really started in 2005, played through till 2015.
Are you talking Carlos Peña?
Nope. This guy was a stud, like a superstar for a short amount of time. I believe he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
All right, I've got my guess. I didn't think this guy made 3 All-Star teams, but the way you're talking about him now, I'm going to go Rocco Baldelli.
No, I'm talking Grady Sizemore, who did play a handful of games for the Tampa Bay Rays in 2015. It was his last season. He played 58 games for him. He actually did all right. 746 OPS, 107 OPS plus, only hit 257, but 6 home runs, 58 games. Not terrible. It's double digits over a long season. Stole 3 bags, so wasn't his old self. For the Red Sox, Sizemore, not as good. Hit a 71 OPS plus, so he was 29% worse than the average bat in Major League Baseball that year. 612 OPS, not the best. 2 home runs. Gordo, you're better at this than I am. Didn't he have some huge home run really early on in the season for the Red Sox? It's like the Orioles or something.
That rings a bell. I don't have a specific yes or no answer for you, but I do remember him kicking it off like, let's go, great, let's go. And then it was just like...
And like we talk about, you know, Garrett Whitlock's injuries and him missing time. This is one of the best examples of a guy who... He's kind of like Derrick Rose, almost. Kind of like a baseball Derrick Rose, Grady Sizemore. Like, listen to these numbers. 2006, played every single game, 751 at-bats, 28 home runs, led the league with 53 doubles. Just unbelievable. 907 OPS, and he's playing great defense at a premium spot. Handsome as hell, too. Grady Sizemore was a stud. It's a shame he lost so many games due to injuries.
Him and Travis Hafner on that 07 team for Cleveland.
Hey, don't forget about Trot Nixon on that team,
and
Joe Braver.
Let me finish.
I got the weirdest Travis Hafner trivia. 2 things. Do you guys know what his nickname was?
Hammer.
Is it
Hafner
as wild as Koopaloop?
His nickname was Pronk. And I remember looking that up. I was like, what the hell is Pronk? Why do they call him Pronk? When he was in the low minors, they like the raw skills, but one of his coaches said he moves like a donkey. So they called him Project Donkey and they shortened it to Pronk. I don't know why I remember that, But that's my Travis Hafner fun fact, Project Donkey. And it was a good project. It worked. He was really good.
I hope Yankee fans are talking Travis Hafner on Guys Being Dudes on whatever podcast they have.
Weirdest batting stance ever. Like, he just bizarre. But that guy was a beast. Yeah. Not as good as Grady Sizemore, though. My pick. I love this segment. It's always a trip down memory lane with the boys.
Grady Sizemore had there was like a section of female fans that would congregate, and they would form Grady's Ladies out in Cleveland. That was the thing.
Yeah, bro. The guy, he's one of those guys, you look at him and you're like, life is unfair that he's like this big, athletic, super handsome, now super wealthy dude. It's like some guys just have all the luck, but
not Grady, though.
Not all the luck.
Not all the luck. Yeah.
Plenty of luck, though. He made his mark.
He's had a good life. Anything else from you guys before we get to some Nuff Said?
Let's do it.
I'll kick off the Nuff Said because mine's just a quick thing. I can't believe that we are watching the NBA with the Celtics in the conference finals and the Mavericks in the Western Conference Finals. There is a legitimate chance here. And by the time you hear this, you'll know who the Mavericks are playing. We don't know. But there's a legitimate chance that you could get a Celtics versus Kyrie Irving NBA Finals. And
please, that would be
my heart wants it so bad. My heart wants it.
I want the Celtics to win the title in Boston against Kyrie, and then the camera to cut to Kyrie, and he's literally crying, walking off the court, getting no more boos. Nobody's even booing him anymore. We just don't care. Celtics won the title. You're irrelevant. Loser. Goodbye. That's what I want.
Imagine, though, if the Celtics win the title and like Tatum's hoisting the trophy and there's just a fuck Kyrie chant, though. I know it's like show him that we don't care anymore. Like, no, I don't care. Fuck him.
What would be funny is if the Celtics are winning, it's like game seven. The Celtics are up by like 25 with 3 minutes left and they know they've got it. They've done it. It's over. They win the title. And for like a minute, Celtics fans go, thank you, Kyrie.
That's good.
Fucking asshole. There's not many athletes, professional athletes, that I would say, like, I hate that guy. Just because, you know, they're just guys. But I hate Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. Asshole.
You are not alone, my friend.
Like, Boston completely rolled out the red carpet for him, too. He was postered everywhere around Boston. Every sign was Kyrie. Everyone had a Kyrie jersey. Nobody treated him like we were so good to him. And he was, too much pressure in Boston. Fuck you.
And then proceeded to step. The thing, like, there are people who are like, oh, every guy leaves every team. Like, why are you so salty? It's like, it's watching him stomp on the logo. It's watching him flip off the fans. Like, we could go on and on about this. I've decided that I think I hope it happens. But at the same time, there would be nothing more painful than losing to him in the finals. I might not emerge.
Celtics would absolutely mollywop Dallas. I like to think they
actually had one of the best defenses in the league down the stretch.
Yeah, but they've gotten better.
I like to think they would, but at the same time, it's like you never know. Like, the no one thought the Raptors would beat the Warriors, and then Kevin Durant tears his Achilles, and what do you know?
Well, it doesn't count if there's an injury. It doesn't count.
That's true.
Joe, you got enough said?
I actually got enough said, but I want to turn it on the two of you. So last Saturday was quite eventful for the two of you, I should say, for those that missed it. It's on the Play Tessie feed, and it's also on all our feeds of WEEI, including Baseball Isn't Boring. You two getting quizzed and getting incorrect answers, forcing you guys to take the Wasabi Challenge. And we're not talking like the regular dollop that you normally get. That's like yay big. No, this is a spoonful that both of you took. And I just want to ask, any lingering effects as we're now more than 24 hours from that moment?
I mean, I never liked wasabi. I think I hate it even more. But lingering effects wise, like all day yesterday, every time, like if I coughed or like burped or anything, it was just like wasabi. You know what it is? It's the horseradish adjacent taste that I don't like. I don't get it. It's not the spiciness, it's the taste. I think it's fucking revolting.
I think I agree with you, Sammy. It is the taste more so than the spiciness. I'm fine with spice. The taste was terrible. Lingering effects, no, but what I did do, I think it did impact my decision making later in the day. I went to get Cold Stone at like 5 p.m. I'm definitely never like a sweets before dinner guy. And like, I'm like not a guy who likes to eat like an hour or two before dinner, because I want to like fully enjoy whatever the hell it is I'm eating for dinner. I went and got that ice cream because I did, like, it was like anytime I like exhaled or something, I breathed out of my mouth. Yeah. I could smell it. I didn't have any gum in the car, so like I just had that. It's not that I could still taste it, but it's just anytime that I like that anything, any air or anything came out of my mouth, it was there.
It did kind of screw up my weekend schedule, because I was planning, my plan was after our radio segment, I was going to go on a run, because like I love to run and it's like therapeutic for me. It's like a clear your mind kind of thing. But, you know, I was kind of like, oh, I feel like I should push it back a day. So instead, I woke up a little early today and went on a run. It was fucking raining and it was awful. It was cold and my throat was hurting and I got like mud all over me. And yeah, it was awful. So it did kind of mess me up the following day. I didn't think about that until now. So yeah, don't let wasabi stop you from going on your weekend run.
I agree. That's the lesson learned.
And the lesson is to have a cup of water like Gordo.
That's true. Sammy, you saved me there. You saved me getting the cup of water. I realized that
admire Sammy for going without any liquids or stuff like that.
Yeah. I got one. Yeah. Shout out to a friend of the program, Santi, who we met at Fenway. He gave me some props for doing it without water. So I'm glad somebody noticed. It was,
you deserve the props.
Honestly, I didn't do that on purpose. I forgot that I had finished my glass of water, because I always try to.
I saw you
water.
Do that like a little bit before I saw you finish it. I was like, oh, why did you do that? Because like you were like, I need something to spit it into. I was like, no, you need the water.
I almost fell. You can see it on the video. Like when I got up, because I wanted to go like pace around the room in case I had to throw up, because I did for a second feel like I was going to throw up. And I did like a whoa, like stumble. And you could see it on the video. It looks like it's like when a fighter gets punched and they do the Bambi legs thing. I did that for a moment from wasabi.
Joe, so, I cannot wait. Well, I hope next week it's you doing the wasabi challenge.
Oh, no, no. I got to produce. I got to keep doing my job. No, I got to keep doing my job.
We'll see.
Yeah, you guys see this plane that had to do an emergency landing at Logan?
I did not.
Crazy. Anyway, my enough said. I tried this last year. Everyone laughed at me. Everyone turned out to be correct for laughing at me. But I'm going to try it again. Connor Wong, all-star team. Let me give you my pitch. Okay. I know the nerds are going to be like, well, his blocking and his framing, they aren't exactly up to par to the rest of the league. I hear you, but shut up. Connor Wong is currently hitting 349. That's number one among catchers. He's also got 5 home runs, and he's massively improved. I know that people, like what I just said, the defense people are going to knock it. He's throwing guys out on the bases. He's also doing it at great times, like where it's sick as hell, like to start the game and to end the game. He's one of the fastest running catchers in the league. He impacts the game on the bases. He's batting third for the Red Sox. I know their offense isn't great, but he's still batting third for a major league team. And it's the Red Sox, which I think you get bonus points because it's like, yo, that's a big team. It's not the friggin' Oakland A's over here. What do you guys think? And hold on. Actually, let me back up. Before I turn it over to you guys, the other contestants, Adley Rutschman, who I think, you know, he's got 9 dingers. Everyone loves Adley. He's hitting 309. So he's probably going to be the starter. Ryan Jeffers, 10 home runs. Cal Raleigh, 10. Shea Langeliers, 10 home runs. So there's some guys going deep. Salvador Perez having a renaissance season, hitting 333. He's got 8 home runs. So Connor Wong's putting the ball in play, getting on base, has the highest average, impacts the game the most on the bases, throws guys out. But there's other guys with a good argument. What do you think of Connor Wong as a reserve in the All-Star game this year?
I could see it. I could see it, but I just think there's so much working against him. The fact that the Sox are a 500 team and there's already a bunch of other players that could probably go. You could put Tanner Houck in there. He's probably just as deserving. Cutter Crawford. You can even look at a couple of bullpen guys. You know, Devers will always get that consideration. So I would love it, and I get your argument, but I just think he's got so much working against him.
One thing, though, you got to remember is that the Red Sox have the second best pitching staff ERA in baseball, and the catcher has a lot to do with that. So you got to give Connor Wong some props there. I know some of the metrics aren't friendly, and you can see it in terms of the pitch framing and the blocking. Like, a lot of balls do get by him. I want him on the All-Star team, though. I feel like it's kind of just a toss-up with a lot of these guys. I think you're going to have a hard time getting him in the starter role because the fans are going to vote for Adley, so I agree with you there, Sammy. The one guy that Ryan Jeffers having this good of a season stands in the way a lot. Because, like,
yeah, fuck that dude. Fuck Ryan. Who the hell are you? Get out of here. You're ruining Connor Wong's freaking all-star season. By the way,
no,
Connor
screw Wong. It. Put him on. Put him in. I remember when you said this last year. It was, it seemed crazy at the time. And you're saying it this year, and it doesn't seem that crazy. Like,
there was no Jonah Hind in the way.
It was crazy at the time. I was just living in the moment. But hey, credit to Connor Wong. Last year, he was fourth percentile in Major League Baseball in strikeout rate. That's awful. Striking out 33% of the time. This year, 18.8%, which is above average, actually. That's 65th. So that's a massive step forward. So even if he doesn't make the All-Star team, he's trending up. We love Connor Wong. He only has one expression, which is sick. Hope he makes the All-Star team.
I forget who to credit it to, but someone did tweet this, that Connor Wong from last year to this year has the biggest improvement in terms of strikeout percentage in baseball.
Ooh, fire Pete Fatsy. Fire Pete Fatsy. Sorry, had to do it.
No, I think we're all on the Connor Wong to All-Star team bandwagon.
If he keeps that batting average up, like, the batting average sticks out. Like, people, it's the players that do the reserves, right? It's the players and the coaches.
I don't know. Hey, you want me to give you a
message? Mostly coaches.
His batting run value, whatever the fuck that means, but Baseball Savant, here you go, nerds. 80th percentile. That's good. And he's fast, and he's got a nuke for an arm, and he doesn't strike out anymore.
That's not just catches. That's everybody.
Yeah, that's everybody. So,
yep.
Connor Wong. He's also... Yeah, actually, I don't know if this is true. It feels like he's clutch.
Well, he's been the Red Sox best hitter with two outs.
By what metric?
I don't know. They keep talking about it on the broadcast.
Clutch factor. No, never mind.
It's clutch. Okay. I think it literally just has the highest batting average on the team with two outs.
I just looked up his clutch factor and it doesn't fit my narrative, so I'm not going to read the stat.
All right, don't do it then.
no, he's like slightly below average. Whatever. Let's go Sox.
Sox kid. Anything else before we wrap this up?
Yep, Celtics in five.
Yeah, Celtics to the title game. And hopefully winning it over Kyrie.
Ugh, just go Celtics. Sox, yeah. Keep us in contention through the summer. Just keep us in it. Give us something to cheer for. Celtics, bring home the title. Let's get it. But until you hear from us next, which will be after the Celtics start that series, but after the Red Sox series as well. This has been episode 74 of Play Tessie. Before you head out, before you click on something else, remember, hit us up, subscribe, whether it's on the Odyssey app, Apple, Spotify, hit that subscribe button and rate us 5 stars. Check us out on YouTube as well. We are on the WEI channel. We've got our own playlist. So check out all the Play Tessie episodes on YouTube. Remember to rate our videos 5 stars. It helps us out a ton. So we really appreciate when you guys do that. And when you guys reach out to us either via the comment section in either the podcast platforms or YouTube or on the socials, in which you can find us at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. But until next time, for Sammy, for Joe, it's Gordo here. It's been Play Tessie. Let's get a series win. Let's talk positively about the Red Sox. Let's get
it's
a series
Tampa,
win.
Dude. It's just Tampa.
It's just
Tropicana Field. That's all it is.
What could go wrong?
The Sox fans used to pile that place full. And now we'll see. That place is a dump. Sox, prove me wrong. Don't let me be right. Please. I don't want
my series. Before we wrap, have either of you ever been to the Trop?
No, I need to go. I'm going to go before they shut it down.
I really want... It's kind of like Oakland to me. Like, I want to go just to see how bad it really is.
Exactly.
Wait, Tessie road trip?
Wait, yeah, let's do it. Not necessarily this year. Next year, though. I think we have like 2 more years or 3 more years after this before they are supposedly opening up that new ballpark.
Bro, well, there's going to be tens of Rays fans there if we go this year. Tens. Maybe even 20 entire fans.
And they can be violent, too. So you gotta be careful.
They could hurl mean words at you like... cotton-headed ninny muggins.
Oh, whatever. God. That I don't know.
What movie is that from?
It's Elf.
That's Elf.
Elf.
That's Elf.
Elf. I knew it. Anyway, all right. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, don't say anything more about Rays fans. You're gonna make me not want to go. I do want to go. I want to go. Send Play Tessie to the Trop And for that to happen, the Red Sox need to sweep the series. So let's do that.
We are not going.
Let's do it. It's happening. Shot. It's happening. Thanks for tuning in. Play Tessie episode 74. Go Sox. Toodaloo.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.